Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Millwall captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We hit the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again. And Millwall are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lucas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. It's a good deflection!
Hello and welcome to the MFC Podcast. Tonight, myself, Jane Buster, will be joined by this year's MFC Podcast Player of the Year. We've not actually revealed who's won it yet, but I think there'll be few surprises that Louis Moult came out on top when we asked all guests over the course of the season to place their votes. Chris Cadden has scooped the Young Player of the Year award. They'll both be presented at an upcoming game. We're not sure of our fixtures as yet. Patterson Trophy Supplies have supplied us with two brilliant trophies again, so we would like to thank them for their support. Jay, it was a fairly unanimous decision, and Louis Moult absolutely romped home to claim the Player of the Year award. No surprises, eh?
No, not at all. You're right, it was probably the one, as one-sided as it possibly could be. You know, it wasn't obviously just ourselves, it was all the past guests and things like that voting on it. And there was obviously a little bit of discussion or a little bit of differences in opinion on who the young player could be. I think, you know, Chrissy Cannon and Ben Hall were both big contenders, but in terms of the Player of the Year, there was only ever going to be one name, and there's no surprises that it's Louis Moult.
Buster, it's only been a period of 9 months that Louis's been at the club, but he's certainly made a great impression. It could be his goals that will propel us towards, well, they have propelled us towards the top six, and we've ended the 33 games in the top six, but with the outside chance of Europe as well, he's been a massive part of that.
He certainly has, and you know, as Jay says there, I think just about everybody who we asked said, you know, that it would be Louis. I don't think MD chose anyone else. I'm not sure if MD else got a vote, but as you say, he's been fantastic. Not only just his goals, his work rate, you know, his what appears to be his passion for what he does as well. You know, he's not going to have very, you know, any links to the club, but he's very passionate about what he does, and you know, right now he's doing it for us. So that's exactly what you want to see. And as Jay says as well, I think it was, you know, Chrissy Cadden or Ben Hall, obviously, for the young player, and that was a bit closer than the senior player, but, you know, congratulations to them both.
Well, I'm delighted to say that Louis is actually going to join us on tonight's podcast, so that'll complete a great season for him, been guesting on was Three Idiots. So what we're going to do is, he's not here at the moment, we'll add him in and we'll get rocking with the podcast. And we'll also be editing out me saying rocking with the podcast. We're delighted to welcome along the podcast Player of the Year for 2015-16, Louis Moult. Louis, congratulations on your win and welcome along.
Thank you very much. It means a great deal to myself. You know, it's been an up and down season, but you know, I think we're getting our rewards just about now, if I'm honest.
Yeah, well, we'll discuss your season as a whole a wee bit later on, but first of all, we'll focus on Saturday's game against Celtic. It was After a difficult first half, the team responded very well, and there was the goal for Scott McDonald that was ruled out, which I embarrassingly celebrated for about 5 minutes before realising it was disallowed. And then we got back in level terms through McDonald again. Celtic obviously went on to get the winning goal. A real shame for Conor Ripley, the ball sneaking through his legs after he had such a great afternoon. He really kept Celtic at bay in that first half. It must have been an afternoon with frustration, but given the results at the end of the day, a fair bit of elation as well, and reaching the top six, considering, as you say, it has been quite a difficult season at times.
Yeah, I think I was a very frustrated man at half-time. I thought we were too deep and we sat off and give Celtic too much respect. Second half was a totally different game, and we got about them a little bit more, got in their faces, so to speak, a little bit more, and really put the pressure on them. And like you say, I think we had a goal disallowed. I think we should have been 2-1 up. It's very, very, very tight on Scotty's second goal. But you know that's football, and that's why we love football. Sometimes you get it, and sometimes you don't. Just lately, we've been getting a little bit of luck. On the road as well, so you know you've got to take the rough with the smooth. And second half was much better from us as a team.
Jay, I think it shows how far the team have come in the last couple of months. That even a goal behind, there still was that belief that if things changed in terms of attitude towards pressing and showing a bit more of attacking intent, that we could get back into it. And that's exactly what happened.
Absolutely. I just think, Lou basically summed it all up there. I think the first half we didn't press enough. We didn't show a lot too much respect. And I think that was unfortunate, because I think getting into the game, we were the form team. And I don't think Celtic, as far ahead as they may be in terms of budget and things like that this season, they're certainly not. They've not earned that much respect this season. They're not a Celtic team of old. And, the way we were playing in recent weeks, the momentum we had, it would have been good to go and press a bit more, show a little less respect than we did. But second half, it was a lot more improved. And as Louis said, if the luck had been in on Saturday, then we might have been able to secure top six before even the other games had kicked off.
But a superb performance from Conor Ripley, I suppose, soured by Lee Griffiths' second goal. It was nice to see the support really getting behind the big man, and because it's been a fantastic acquisition. It's just a shame that he has to go back to Middlesbrough, unfortunately. But you'll hope that he can pick himself up, and I'm sure he will.
Yeah, as you said, if any other goalkeeper in the last maybe year or so had made that mistake, they'd have got absolute pelters. But as soon as it happened, everybody got right behind them. Fans down at our end were giving it, as the wee song they sing about him. So, it's one of those things. He was having a great game, it's unfortunately just went through.
Louis, Conor seems like a big character, will the guys rally around him, that being said, and pick him up going into the last five fixtures?
Yeah, I think as the boys mentioned there, I think if it wasn't for Conor, we'd have been 3 or 4 down in the first half. I thought he was outstanding in the first half. Some great saves, and I've watched them back as well. And he nearly saves the first one off Griffiths as well. So Conor was brilliant. Just that one little mistake, which to be fair to him is probably one of the only mistakes he's made all season. And he's still a young player, so he's got these things are going to happen for him. But I think he's been a wall for us this season. And he'll be fine. He'll be fine tomorrow, and the boys will. The boys said straight after the game, Conor, it's nothing to do with you there. You kept us in the game, so if it wasn't for you, we would have been 4 or 5 down. So Conor knows he's got the backing of everyone, and I'm sure he'll be straight back to his best on Saturday.
Looking at Celtic, we've obviously played them 3 times this season. A goal in it on each occasion. Once us coming out on top, and Celtic winning 1-0 and 2-1. Have you been impressed by what you've seen of Celtic? I know they've struggled at times this season. Can you see why they've struggled, or have you been kind of impressed with the quality they offer?
They're obviously a quality football team and a football club with good backing. Saturday. I felt that when we played them at their place. They just give you, I don't know, they give you that little chance. I don't know whether the two centre-halves are as commanding as what they've had in the past. I think that's where it starts. I know from a striker's point of view, you know, I always kind of think I was going to get a chance. Didn't quite get a clear-cut chance on Saturday, but I know at their place I had a few chances and I managed to score two goals. But I always seemed like I was going to get a chance. And I don't know, I didn't really see much of Celtic before I was up here, but for me that's where it's coming from.
You talked about the two goals at Celtic Park. It was a fantastic result, given that the first half of the season was a struggle. It was a real highlight, the win at Celtic Park. That must have given you massive confidence going into the second part of the season.
Yeah, it was a massive result for us. Something that we needed really, really desperately. Just so we had that little bit of belief about us. And to be the man to score the two goals was really a dream come true. And, you know, I think from that day on, I think we just got better and better. You know, we had a tricky spell, a couple of months back. But you know, as a football club and as a team, we all stuck together, and we've come out the other end on top. So it's as we sit now in the season, you know, we've had a great season.
We'll go back to the start of the season, and you joined in July from Wrexham after. With a very impressive scoring record, it must be said, in last season with Wrexham. How big an opportunity was it heading north to join Motherwell and play in the Scottish top flight?
Yeah, it was as soon as I heard about it, I was excited straight away. I wanted it to be done quickly. I wanted to be here. I wanted to show more people, you know, what I believe I can do. And I wanted to share that with people. The nights like going Celtic and scoring goals there. When I was signing, that's what I was thinking about. You know, I was thinking about scoring goals against the top teams in the division, against whoever I was coming up against. Thankfully, I've managed to do that, and I've enjoyed myself this season. And that's why I think I've been playing my best stuff, because I'm playing with a smile on my face, and that's why I'm playing well at the minute.
You were obviously signed by Ian Barraclough, who is no longer here after departing in September time. Is that a difficult thing when you're signed by one manager and then you kind of almost have to impress all over again when a new man arrives?
I think it could be a blessing in disguise. Ian Barraclough bought me, and I'm very, very thankful of Ian Barraclough for bringing me in and giving me this opportunity. But when he went and the new gaffer come in, I think everyone kind of felt like they've got to prove themselves again. And you know, you saw a few more boys in the gym trying to get fitter and fitter and stronger, trying that little bit more in training and games. And I think that helped us. Stupidly enough, I think it shouldn't, because you know, people should be in the gym 24/7. They should be working that extra little bit hard in training and in games. But I think it helps us as a squad and as a team. I think you got an extra 5% from near enough everyone.
It didn't take you very long to notch your first goal, a 2-1 defeat at St Johnston. You put us ahead that day, and then the goals just started rolling, didn't they? The goal at East Fife, you scored the winning goal against Kelly, and then the late equaliser against Ross County. So, considering you hadn't played in Scottish football, to only take five games to find the net and then to start a prolonged period of hitting the net, that's quite an impressive feat.
Yeah, I was always confident. As soon as I got my chance, I was going to score. I sat out the first few games. Probably wasn't quite fit enough to start the season off, as I had a big break, and the boys here didn't have much of a break, so they were a lot fitter than me. But I think sitting the first few games out was a blessing. I got to see the style of football and how quick it was, and thankfully I picked it up as soon as I got in, and I managed to score a few goals.
We talked about the disappointments under Ian Barraclough, particularly the defeat in the derby at Hamilton, and then the really disappointing night at Capello against Morton. There was a lot of talk in the press and kind of speculation regarding that Morton game and quite heated exchanges in the dressing room afterwards. Was that perhaps, for want of a better expression, kick up the arse the guys needed? They needed a few home truths and to push on in a different direction from what was happening, because the forum was poor at the time.
Yeah, we were on a bad time. There was no hiding that. There was a few things said in changing rooms, but let me tell you, that isn't the first time that's happened. There's been a few times this season where there's been a few things that have been in changing rooms, and the boys have had to look around, and we've all had to look around at each other and kind of think, you know, if we don't pull our fingers out here, we're going to be in a relegation battle. And that's, we've had that a few times this season, but thankfully we've dug in and we've stayed together. And I think that's the main thing. We've all stuck together as a football club. The supporters have supported us through thick and thin, and they've been there every game, and I think they've been fantastic for us. And to see where we are now than where we were, I think the only thing you can put down to is hard work. We have literally outworked teams, and that's where it's come from. We got a little bit of extra luck. I think we've made our own luck. We were going to places, Dundee away, penalty in the last minute where we thought we should have won the game. Little things like that weren't going our way, and then it spun on its head, and then things were going our way. But it only started going our way because we didn't put our heads down. We kept our heads high, and we kept working hard. And that's why we are where we are.
The defeat to Morton obviously ended Ian Barraclough's tenure at the club. And was there a kind of feeling of disappointment for the manager that the results hadn't went the way everyone hoped after a very good end to a disappointing campaign last season?
Yeah, I think everyone felt a little bit sorry for Ian Barraclough because he was a generally lovely person and a good manager. But the results weren't good enough. I think he'd admit that. But I think for the football club, he did the club well. You know, he kept the club in the division last season, and he bought a few players in, but literally the results wasn't going for him. But I think everyone felt a little bit sorry for him. Yeah, but you know, we had to move on, and that's what we did. And that's football, I suppose.
Just to ask as well, Lee. You know, as you mentioned, Ian Barraclough, great guy. It's been the same sort of squad of players, really. There's not been many come in. I know there's a couple left, but what's been the main difference around about the team and the performances then, if it's, you know, it is the same guys, basically?
Yeah, it's a strange one, you know, and I've been asked that question a few times. I think what the gaffer's done now is, I think he's worked a little bit harder in training. I think when he first come in, we were in every day. We were doing double sessions. We were running in the afternoon on a Tuesday. And the boys were like, "Woof, what's going on here?" It was a reality check. It really was. But I guarantee you now, if you ask every individual, they would turn around and say, "We needed that. We didn't like doing it. No one likes to be run around a football pitch." We all kind of looked at each other and said, "Right, we actually need this." So, you know, a bit of tough love, maybe, that helped us. You know, like, Barraclough was really well, and Robbo, the assistant, as well. Robbo stayed, and Robbo's a fantastic coach, and we've got a good balance here at the football club.
Mark McGee came in, and as you say, a lot of things changed. I suppose, initially, it was a chance for everyone to kind of re-establish themselves and prove themselves all over again. You yourself, you dropped out a couple of times. You were tried in a few positions. But I think the day that it maybe there were signs that things were coming together was the 1-0 win at Rugby Park. It wasn't a pretty game by any stretch of the imagination, but you got the late winner. It was a huge 3 points against a team at the time considered as a major relegation rival.
Yeah, it probably was a turning point if you look back. Kilmarnock away with a 1-0 win away from home. And like you said, the gaffer come in and he needed to see what he had at the football club. You know, he left me out. I was obviously really disappointed, but
being the gaffer he is, he pulled me aside, he spoke to me, and he explained why it was he left me out, and, you know, I had to get on with it, and that's that. I got on there, and I managed to get the goal, which I was delighted with. But, yeah, I think he's the first month or two, he had to experiment, and he had to see where people are best and what kind of people they are, not just on the pitch, but off the pitch, and where they are best playing. What positions, what formations, and I think he's figured that out. He's figured that out of late, and that's why we've gone on this run.
As you say, the win at Kelly really was the win that changed, and then after a few disappointing results again, the defeat to Cali Thistle and the defeat to Ross County, the real positives began, the fantastic game against Hearts, where you got a goal, then the victory over Dundee, and then that led to the game that we've already talked about, the 2-1 victory against Celtic, where you get both the goals, and it was just the celebrations after it were absolutely fantastic. We made a dreadful decision and decided that we would watch it in a dodgy internet stream, and we were actually finding out the goals were in before we actually saw it on the television and looked on with jealousy, but as I say, that must have been a hugely special day for yourself, and to silence that many people must be a very sweet feeling.
Yeah, definitely. You know, in the possession I'm in, you always get doubters. You always get people saying, you know, you won't do it, you won't score goals. As a football club, you'll say, you know, they should have beat you. You won't beat them. You know, it's brilliant to prove people wrong. It's very nice when you manage to do it. But like you say, we went on a lovely run after the Kilmarnock game. You know, we got a 2-2 draw, I think it was at Hearts, at home. Beat Dundee, then we beat Celtic. You know, and like I said before, I think it was the hard work and the togetherness more than anything that got us them wins and the points on the board that we so desperately needed.
Well, it wasn't, we don't know for certain whether it was the kind of, they were both a direct result of each other, but following the Cove Rangers winning the Scottish Cup, you went in a run without scoring, and it was also a run that the team began to slip again. There was quite a number of defeats on the trot, and we went out the Scottish Cup as well. But then, again, kind of almost out of nowhere, the 3-0 victory at Tannadice started to turn things on its head, and we managed to find the forum that had just deserted us for a while.
Yeah, we went through a little funny period. I think things weren't going our way. I found myself on the bench a few times. Again, frustrated, but, you know, had to get on with it. That's part and parcel of my job. I like to think, you know, my hard work and my belief has got me back into the reckoning and back into the team and scoring goals again. But we went through a couple of tricky periods. Went out of the cup. I won the goal. I think we, you know, as a team, actually, I think we played quite well, and we set up to stop Inverness, and that's what we did. I think they struggled to break us down at home because they are such a good footballing team. But you know, when you get hit with a wonder strike like that, that's, you know, that's when things started, just didn't go our way. But we got a nice 3-0 win away from home against Dundee United, which we knew we had to win that game, and that's what we did.
We sit here tonight, and it's easy to be kind of smart after the event, but sitting in fourth place. But if things had went differently in that evening, do you think it could have been the case that we could be looking at a real possibility of automatic relegation, never mind the playoffs, because that would have closed the gap quite considerably if United had won that game, and you never know what directions both team seasons would have taken following that point.
Well, yeah, that's correct. Like I said before, we knew we had to win that game, and I think it was a few weeks later when we had them again on the Friday night, and then we had Hamilton, and we knew we had to win that little bulk of games. Luckily for us, we won all the games, and we managed to beat Aberdeen as well as Inverness at their place. But we knew there was a three-game period where we had to put points on the board. If we didn't, we knew we were in a relegation battle. And I think the fear of knowing we could be in a relegation battle did as well, because we were ruthless. We went and won all them games and scored some great goals and played very well.
Yeah, that's it. I know there was the late disappointment, and late goals were a bit of a theme throughout the month of February, but to go on and beat Thistle and then the Derby win, which was a special one. I know it sometimes gets downplayed, the Motherwell Wackies game, but there's been so many disappointments, particularly for the fans. You feel every defeat, and we've went there and had some horrendous results. So it was a really special afternoon going to Ackies and winning. And you could tell how much it meant to the players as well. The celebrations after it were pretty extreme, and it looked like everyone really enjoyed it and knew the significance of the game.
Yeah, everyone knew exactly what the game was about, and more than anything, that one was for the fans, because we knew that terrible, terrible record that we had at their place. You know, I've only been at the club, what, 6-7 months, but I knew straight away that we hadn't won there in 7 or 8 years, or whatever it is. I got told that straight away, so I knew we had to try and win the game. Thankfully, we got that, and like you say, the scenes after the game were brilliant, and that they're the kind of things that brings this club together, and is why we are where we are. I think it was very similar away at Inverness when we won the game last minute 2-1. You know, the scenes there were brilliant again, and they have been so often this season, and that's what it's all about.
We'll talk about that Inverness game in just a wee minute, but the winning goal against Aberdeen, we've already talked about this quite a lot in the podcast. That was what we loved about that was the fact that you were running away before the ball hit the net. We're all shutting our eyes, praying that it goes in, and you're already celebrating. that was confidence in the extreme.
From where I was, I knew it was going in. It was only going to take a mole to tip it round the post if it wanted to gone in. So, it was a great moment, actually, that game. A game that I really enjoyed. And to get the winner was special because it was a good game. I think second half, we were the better side against Aberdeen. Created a lot of chances. And I enjoyed the goal because, you know, it just a goal that I just didn't give up, and I got my rewards for not giving up. Managed to just sneak in there and get a two on it, and like I say, from where I was, I knew it was going in, so that's why I did a little celebration straight away.
The celebrations of following your goals are always, that's what's been fantastic about seeing you play for Motherwell this season, that you clearly get such an enjoyment out of it, and the celebrations. You play the game with a smile on your face generally, but the celebrations, it just shows how much you love scoring goal.
Well, that's it. You know, I do cringe sometimes watching them back because, you know, I'm punching boards and I'm going mental, but it's really how much, you know, it means to me. And I just love scoring goals, and I love winning games and scoring goals for Motherwell. It means a great deal to me. I've been down there playing part time, and I've managed to get my chance and play in the Premier League up here and play for Motherwell. And every time I step out on the football pitch, you know, I appreciate the support I get first and foremost from everyone, because, you know, I'm a fan also, you know, but I just love it. The feeling you get is unbelievable.
That's been another thing. It's been so nice to see your interaction with the supporters. We greatly appreciate you giving up your time this evening to come on and speak to us. As we say, we're just fans as well, so this is a great thing for us. But to reply to so many messages and Twitter and do things like this and get along and be involved. When the club's a community club, it's such a nice thing to see a player that genuinely cares and likes spending time and interacting with the support.
Yeah, it's what it's all about, you know. We're all human beings, you know. I'm not above no one, you're not above me, you know. We're all equal, so, you know, that's my take on it. We've all got the same, we all like the same thing. We like football, we like Motherwell, so we've got a lot in common. So I don't see why I shouldn't reply to you guys, you know. And I think if we do all come together, it's a massive plus for the football club. You know, I've been at football clubs in the past where players work against fans, and that's when things go wrong. Everyone has to work together, and that's what it's all about. I love interacting with fans, and like I said before, you know, we're all human beings, and I like to treat people how I expect to be treated.
Can I just ask, Lee, obviously you said earlier about coming up to Motherwell and getting your chance, and I presume that, you know, when you come up here, you would have been thinking or confident that you were going to, first and foremost, get in the first team, then go on and score goals. But what is it like? Is it slightly surreal at times? Because there is quite a massive adoration for you, I think, from the Motherwell support. A fan club or whatever you want to call it. You've really kind of got masses of the support right behind you, absolutely loving you. I said earlier, you've only been here for 6 or 7 months, and yet people, you know, already think of you as this great hero. I mean, what is that like? Is it surreal at times? Because that probably wasn't at the forefront of your mind when you actually came up here.
Well, I'm sitting here with a massive smile on my face hearing you say that, so that's music to my ears, so thanks for that. But you know, I do have to pinch myself. You know, the fans have been unbelievable with me since the day I walked in. On social media, straight away they were backing me. Probably didn't have a clue who I was, but they were backing me straight away. That was the main thing. And everyone I speak to, you know, they're always so polite and so happy, and they've got time for me. And that's why I'm how I am. You know. I try and work as hard as I possibly can every time I go out there, and I know the fans appreciate that, and you know, and I presume all you fans work really, really hard in everyday life, and the least I could do is run my socks off for everyone watching, and I enjoy it more than anything.
It's when we're talking about the community club there. That's something I wasn't aware of, the fact that you've been part of a fan ownership model before at a former club. Was that at Wrexham? Was it last season?
Yeah, Wrexham were a fan owned as well. Yeah.
So how's that been in terms of how successful was it for Wrexham? There is still some cynics when it comes to the Welsh society, ourselves possibly included. But how sustainable did a club like Wrexham, who have possibly got quite a similar fan base to ourselves?
Yeah, there's quite a very similarities with Motherwell and Wrexham, probably about the same fan base. Yeah, round about the same. We probably get a bit more sometimes, but you know, it's been a massive plus for Wrexham. I know they're debt free and they've just got the ground back, so it's a massive plus for them. And they really came together as a club when they were very nearly went the wrong way, and they came together as a club, and the fans saved the club, so to speak. And you know, they did come together as a club, and it's similar with Motherwell. What's trying to happen? I think we're in that transition at the minute, though, and I think Wrexham were a couple of years ahead. But I've seen it done by Wrexham, and it was definitely a plus for Wrexham. If Motherwell can achieve similar things, then I think it'd be good for the football club.
So is it the case that the Welsh Society have been in and spoken to the players and kind of reinforced the message of how important it is that the society is backed by everyone, and as a result to succeed, or with a view to succeeding?
The players haven't been told a great deal about it, if I'm totally honest. So, other than what we choose to read as all as we know, really.
Yeah, it's just an interesting one. From my point of view, it's going to have to, the lines of communication are going to need to be a bit clearer. And if you see guys like yourself supporting it and backing it, and perhaps actually having been given more knowledge, then there's much more. The podcast saying, yes, you should join the Welsh Society, isn't going to be as effective as guys like yourself saying it. And that's the thing that kind of disappoints me a wee bit, I must say, that the Society haven't had the foresight to speak to guys like yourself who are prominent on social media and willing to do work out with playing for 90 minutes and going to training. So it just seems like there's an open goal that they're missing there, unfortunately. But if it's worked for Wrexham, I mean, we've just got to hope, I suppose, that it works here.
Oh yeah, you know, like you say, if something can be done, you know, I'm more than happy to help out if it's going to help the football club. You know, that's what I'm about, and that's what, you know, all of us are about. We're here to help. So, you know, if that is going to help, then let's do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose the advantage of the model and the kind of key component of that is developing young players with the view to sell them on. And there's two players in particular that have come into the team and they've certainly not looked out of place. Ben Hall and the podcast Young Player of the Year, Chrissy Cadden, have both done fantastically well. I thought Cadden again on Saturday, he's playing with a swagger just now. He looks so confident, almost like he's never been out of the first team. He looks like an experienced campaigner, despite the fact that only 4 months ago he was making his debut.
Yeah, I think the pair of them have been fantastic for us. You know, I think the way the gaffer threw them in was the right way. I don't think the two of them knew much about it at all. Probably just the day before that they knew they were playing. I think sometimes that's the best way to feed these lads on into the men's game. The less they know, the better sometimes. And the both of them adapted straight away. I remember when Ben got put in, I think it was against Dundee at home, and his debut, and he won everything in the air, and he was good on the ball. And straight away from the minute go, I think he won a header in the first minute, and I thought it was right, was sound. And I knew from that moment, you know, he's a good player. And Cads is exactly the same. I think Cads was getting introduced when I first come in pre-season. You know, he was involved and he was training with us. And I don't think he quite had the belief in himself what the coaches did. He came on here and there. I remember Ross County away, he came on and he looked as though he felt he shouldn't be there. But then when he got his start, it was a different story. He started to believe in himself. You could see it straight away. He was a little bit taller. His shoulders were back. His head was up. And he grew a little bit, not just in games, but in training and around the place. He'd become a man a little bit more, a bit more vocal. And I don't think he's looked back since then.
That the influence of Mark McGee and the management team is obviously quite significant there too. It must be a big boost as a player to see your coaching staff held in such high regard when you've got Mark McGee involved in the Scotland set-up, Stephen Robinson with Northern Ireland, Stephen Cragan with Northern Ireland. It really is a talented pool of coaches, isn't it? And they can draw on a lot of experience.
Yeah, you've got a fantastic coaching team at Motherwell. You know, the three you've just mentioned there, and you've got Jim, the goalkeeper coach as well, who was in English Premier League, you know, 2-3 years ago. So fantastic coaching staff at this football club, and they got fantastic experience, not just as coaches, but as players as also. So that helps on and off the pitch. They know what's going on more or less in people's heads because they've been there. And I think that's helped everyone at the football club, actually.
That's it. I can't remember a Motherwell team in recent memory that I've had such a good balance of youth and experience. Keith Lasley's, what, 78 or something like that? And then you've got guys like Stephen Pearson, Stephen McManus, Scott McDonald. For you personally, there must be a few guys in there that have been a big influence in your development over the course of the season.
Yeah, I think what you've just mentioned there, the balance of the team, and I think we've got it spot on. We've got a great mixture of old and young, and then mid-age as well. I like to class myself as mid-age / young, as a 23-year-old. But we've got a great mixture. And if you look at the starting 11 as well, that's mixed as well. And I think that's important. Experience-wise, you know, I think everyone's helped me at the football. I think Laz is always speaking to me and helping me out. Made me feel really welcome off the pitch, along with all the other older boys. You know, Mick was always chatting to me, asking how I was, asking about my family, how they are, and helping me settle more than anything. And then obviously on a playing point of view, you know, playing with Scott, he's helped me a great deal. He's always talking to me and always giving me little pointers, giving me advice, which is very helpful. You know, they've all had fantastic careers, and if I can mirror what Scott has done, I think I've done half well.
That means, oh, sorry, on you go, Buster. Sorry.
I was going to say, sorry, Lee, but to say Scott McDonald talks to you throughout the game, I think that's been nice to him, because we see him in the stands, and as great a player as he is, he must be a moaning face wee getting everywhere he goes. You know, he's a sound wee guy, he's a great player, but he does nothing but moan. And in a good way, I like it about him, I like him, and I'm sure that, you know, him constantly moaning at you helps you through the game as well.
Yeah, Scotty, you know, Scotty's always got something to say. That's who he is. Makes him the player he is. But, you know, he says stuff sometimes, and I agree with most, and I don't disagree with all of it, you know, but we always get on with it, and, you know, we always try and help each other out. I think we work quite close, me and Scotty, in the games, and I think we work really well together. I think we've got a good understanding. We know where each other are going, and I know his game, and I think he knows mine as well. I think that's shown this season.
That's basically exactly what my point was going to be. You can mirror him and everything else, but try not to take his moaning through your life for the because it must be a headache at times. That
no, he's all right. I've got used to it. Goes in one ear and goes out one ear and out the other.
The thing is, his experience shows so much for a guy of quite diminutive stature. He's got so much upper body strength. I thought it was quite surprising to see a Scotland international like Charlie McGrew almost be pushed off the ball quite with relative ease by Scott McDonald on Saturday. He's so deceptively strong, isn't he?
He's very strong, Scotty. He's got that low sense of gravity, which people struggle to deal with. He is really, really, really strong. And when he gets his body in between yourself and the ball, it's really tricky to get the ball. He's very clever with it. He does it really well. And that's another thing that's helped me. You know, I've managed to get on a few of his flick-ons and in and around him for the second ball. Or if it's me winning the header, he knows I might win it, and he might be on the end of it. That's the understanding I'm talking about, you know?
Yeah, that's absolutely. I think that since the turn of the year, yourself and Scott have been such a crucial part of the turnaround. And as I say, we sit fourth following the results on Saturday, so we're going to the top six fixtures now, which, knowing the Scottish Premiership authorities, will be released about 2 hours before the games start. It's a real frustration this, Jay, because you've got the situation where you know what teams are in the top six and the bottom six on Saturday night. Does someone not do a wee bit of overtime on the Saturday night or the Sunday and get this all worked out? So it's the case that they've been released. I know TV need to get their wee turn as well, but why do we have to do this waiting game every season? It's one huge drawback of the split.
Well, you would have thought so. I mean, going into the games at the weekend, there was obviously, you know, a number of teams that could have been in the top six, but it shouldn't take any. You know, you don't need to be a genius to kind of work out what kind of setup. You could possibly have a number of fixture lists ready, depending on who finishes where. But, you know, you kind of touched on it there. The SFA and the SPFL have been so inept for so many years, it's not really a surprise in the slightest.
No, certainly not. Lee, what's your take on the league split? I know it's not likely to be something you've encountered in your career this far, but it certainly adds a bit of drama to the closing few fixtures, and then obviously with the outside chance of Europe, depending on who wins the Scottish Cup, it's going to be an exciting end to the season as well.
Yeah, I'm excited about it now, knowing we're in the top six. I don't think I'd have been excited knowing if we were in the bottom six and fighting for relegation to stay up. I wouldn't have been enjoying it then. But you know, it's a different one for me. I've never experienced it, so I don't really know a great deal about it. So you know, I'm going into it with a little bit unknown. But hopefully, you know, we can fight for a place in Europe. That's in my head at the minute.
Were you guys, just like us, kind of glued to Sky Sports and Saturday watching the results come in and see where the fate lies in terms of finishing the upper reaches or kind of, as you alluded to, struggling out at the bottom?
Yeah, I rushed home and I was I was sat in my living room because my granddad was up with his mate. So we swung by Eckery's and had a chippy on the way home, and then I was in the living room enjoying my fish supper, and jumped up and punched the sky when I saw Killy score the third one. So that was my Saturday afternoon.
Great stuff. Looking just beyond this season, and obviously with the impact you've made, there will be rumours and whispers of where your future lies. Can you put us at ease a wee bit and say that you'll be here next season and hopefully playing in the Europa League?
Well, basically, I'm contracted. That's probably what you thought I was going to say. But I'm contracted, you know, signed a 3-year deal when I came here. So, we'll have to see what happens. But like I say, I've signed a 3-year deal, and I'm enjoying my football at the minute. That's the main thing. So what will be. But one thing's for sure, you know, I'm loving playing for Motherwell. And like you say, I want to try and help us play in Europe. And what a massive achievement that would be, just for myself and for the football club.
Yeah, that's it. We've talked in recent weeks about the noticeable kind of atmosphere about the club. There's been a real change. I know that that's almost natural. As results get better, then there will be a better spirit around the place. But it's been noticeable that as the results have improved, as the atmosphere has improved, the results have also improved. Has it been noticeable playing in these games? For example, the Dundee United game at Fir Park and the Aberdeen game, that the fans are more behind the team than ever before this season?
Yeah, but I think we have to create the atmosphere. We have to play good for you boys to cheer us on. Simple as that, really. We have to excite you. That's what you come for. And I think, in general, our play's been more attacking. We've looked more of a threat. I think Marvin down the left and me and Scotty have looked like we're going to score every time we go up the pitch. And I think that gets you boys and girls on the edge of your seats. And you know, it does make a bit of noise, and you enjoy it that little bit extra. But, you know, myself personally, coming here, I think the fans have been fantastic throughout, because it's been one hell of a roller coaster. But I certainly can't name a time where a fan or a person has instructed bad word towards me, or, you know, tried to slate me, or, you know, I've seen full support all the way through. And that doesn't happen at many football clubs, and that's no surprise where we are now, because everyone's stuck together, and that comes from new fans.
Well, going to this week's Remember Well question, and Jay, I'll just hand over the reins to you. This is where I take a wee 5-minute break, Louis, and have a drink of juice and try and get my voice back. We're all struggling with a bit of the cold just now.
Well, you say that you pass on to me, but it was your question. I just want to put that out because it's a bit personal about you. You know, there's a bit of abuse in here, so I just want to point out that it's you calling yourself a dick. But the Remember Well question basically is, yesterday, obviously it was fired up on Sunday, so yesterday Sparra celebrated Scott McDonald's disallowed goal like a right dick for about 2 minutes before realising it had been ruled out. We're looking for examples of times you've embarrassed yourself at the football. The best will be read out. So I don't know about the best, because there wasn't as many answers as there normally is. I think maybe a few folk were a little bit shy or a little bit too embarrassed to give some options. Ian Pritchard says, the semi-final against Hearts at Easter Road, Fitzpatrick scored the last minute to make it 3-2. I was jumping about like a lunatic and must have been sitting at row P near the middle, and I fell down every stair and ended up at row B with a sprained ankle, but it was worth it. It's my favourite game of all time. We've got another injury here from Neil. He says, in my defence, I was about 10, but Gilles Rousset took a goal kick that sailed straight into the stand where I sat. I went into the stairway to catch it, missed it, and had the ball splat off my face and burst my nose. Sat for the remaining game in pain with tissues, trying to stem the bleeding, feeling like a plum. Helen Smith simply says, my mum was getting her top signed by Hutchie. He asked her to sign. She waved her chest in his face and said, anywhere, hashtag mortified. Matt Miller went with spontaneously hugging strangers after 4-2. Celtic in 91, Hamden Emmy. One, a wee fat guy with glasses, may have been a Mr. Tam Cowan. Nick McDee says, I fell backwards off my seat at the second leg and landed on two poor souls behind me. Hashtag redneck. A bit inventive in the hashtags this week. Craig Pope says, does my victory celebrations at the Masters in 2007 count? I still have Brian Martin's shirt. Those of us who were there will remember that Craig tried to grab Brian Martin's shirt they'd thrown into the crowd and plummeted, what, maybe 15 feet onto the tarmac below.
And quoted as the seventh best moment in Masters history. So it's like
his
near-death experience was better than Zola's debut in the Masters football and things like that. I think that's a bit harsh, to be honest.
Well, Joe McKelvey went with a grand entrance to Rugby Park, caught the ball with everyone watching, tried to return it to the field, but only kick it vertically and hit the top of a two-tier stand to a great ironic cheer. Darren Wood went with, I'll probably go with the halftime challenge at Tynecastle a few years back. I nearly took out Rudy Scatchell in a hamster ball. Gary Howe goes with, I kissed a middle-aged bald man on the forehead at Firth Park after Johnson's goal in the playoff versus Rangers, and Tomo just says, pick a week. There we go. That was quite a few embarrassing moments. Some of them not quite, so I think, you know, hugging strangers and kissing strangers and celebrating goals is all about, surely.
Yeah, there's plenty of good ones there. I think you were kind of taking a wee dig at my question, but there's plenty of good examples there.
Not at all. Watching yourself.
What about you, Lou? There must be a few that, given that you are a footballer, there must be a few embarrassing moments that happen doing your job.
There's a couple. I've scored before now and ran off thinking I've scored and it's been disallowed, so that's made me look like a bit of an idiot, not going to lie. but, you know, we've all been there and it's what it's all about.
Buster, what about you? You could possibly pick a week as well.
I was going to say, I don't have embarrassing things, you know, embarrassing things to do with football, but there's plenty of occasions where I've looked like a dick.
I was just going to give a special mention for Saturday when you obviously dressed yourself in the dark and turned up with a Batman that had the Joker's face in the front in green, white and gold.
I suppose then I.
There was actually people giving disapproving looks in your direction on Saturday just because of your choice of attire.
Aye, they obviously thought you were a Celtic fan in the Motherland.
Well, when you turn up with, as you say, a Batman t-shirt and don't realise that it's, you know, effectively a tricolour on it, you're gonna get the dodgy looks, I suppose.
I think the Batman t-shirt might be controversial enough, to be honest.
I don't mind. I'm a Batman guy. I don't mind Batman.
Jay, any examples for you, pal?
Not really. I mean, I think I'm pretty much the same as Buster. There's nothing that stands out, but, you know, when you're on away days and things like that, there's no doubt times when you've had a few too many and probably a lot of people just think you're an absolute cabbage.
we'll close with just discussing the Player of the Year awards. And, Louis, again, congratulations on your win. I'm sure it will be the first of many. If you were to pick a highlight from this season, what would it be?
Oh, first of all, thank you very much for the award. Really, really appreciate that. Thank you for all the support throughout the season. Would definitely be that, you know, scoring the two and winning at Celtic. Closely followed by probably the winner at home against Aberdeen and the scenes when that goal went in. But yeah, it's got to be the scoring two at Celtic, got to be.
And just a wee mention for Chrissy Cadden, who takes the Young Player of the Year, and I'm sure a few will argue that it was a close call between himself and Ben Hall, it must be said, but a deserving winner there as well.
Yeah, like you say, I think it could have been either or of them. But, you know, fantastic. They've both done brilliant when they've come in. And long may that continue. But well done to Cads, and don't let the performances drop now. Get better and better.
Buster, it'll be good to catch Louis and Chrissy and present their awards. As I said earlier on in the podcast, Patterson's Trophy Supplies have again sponsored the event and given us two fantastic trophies, which we greatly appreciate, and it'll be a good day to to get to recognise two players that have given so much for the club this season?
It certainly will. As you see, you know, it's very generous once again for Patterson, so thanks very much to them. And, you know, as you say, always well deserved when he's his award. Chris as well, to be fair, Chris Cadden as well. Ben Hall will probably argue, you know, it's always the attacking players that get all the glory, but Ben's been brilliant as well. So, you know, as you say, come whenever it's arranged, when the fixtures come out, it'll be good to, you know, shake both their hands.
Jay, there's not really much that needs to be said after that, eh?
Nope.
And so he won't. Right, guys, well, I think that's pretty much all for this week. Louis, thanks again. We really appreciate your time. It's been great watching you in action this season, and we've loved speaking to you tonight.
Thank you very much, guys. Thank you for having me. I appreciate all the support, and keep up the good work.
Jay Buster, thanks as always, guys.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Cheers, thank you.
Boss, pal, thanks.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you, goodbye. So.